the separation of school and state. You know, when I spoke earlier about what we can do to stop this, and what all of us can do, what Christians can do to change things, you have to begin thinking in terms of a vision. What do we want America to be like 20 years from now, 30 years from now? They have a vision. The other side has a vision. The other side has an agenda. And we cannot win this battle by simply being reactive to what they're doing. In other words, we can't keep putting our fingers in the dikes all over the place. We have to be able to tell people that we too have a vision. We too want to change America positively. And so part of the plan, I believe, is dealing with the education system. Now, how do we deal with public education? How do we deal with the government education system? I think we have found out quite dramatically and emphatically that a free society cannot remain free when you have a government monopoly on education. In other words, the very fact of the government's ownership and control of the education system is going to work against freedom. In the first place, if you study the history of public education, how and why the government got involved in education, and I explain that all in my book, Is Public Education Necessary? You will see that the underlying premise behind the entire education system, the government system, is to assert social control over people, not education. First of all, before we had public schools, before the government got involved in education, literacy was higher in this country than it is today. There were no kids who were not going to school because they were poor. And we had private schools and we had charity schools. These were schools set up by philanthropists for poor kids. So everybody got an education. The reason why the government got involved was because the Harvard Unitarians wanted to get Christianity out of education. They wanted to get rid of Calvinism. As a matter of fact, Harvard became the citadel of anti-Calvinism when the Unitarians took over. And their aim was to change the mentality of Americans, social control. They wanted to get education out of the hands of religionists, get God out of education. And if you read that book, you will see that it was a confluence of forces: the Harvard Unitarians, the Owenite Socialists, who created their communist colony in the United States in 1826 in New Harmony, Indiana. I don't know how many of you have ever been there, but if you'd like to see the first secular communist experiment in the Western world, it wasn't in Russia. It was here in the good old USA in New Harmony, Indiana, and a very rich lady has restored the town, so it's a lovely place to visit. And that experiment failed because Robert Owen believed that children educated under the old system cannot possibly adapt themselves to a communist way of life. And so he said, we've got to have a national education system that trains kids to become little communists. And of course, that's what's going on in our schools today with cooperative learning, group learning. They're trying to do everything in their power to destroy individual intelligence. And that's being done in the schools now. Then, of course, you had the Hegelian statists who believed that the state was God, and our public school people drew their plan from the Prussians, from the Germans. There was nothing in the American Constitution or in the American psyche that said you got to have a government education system. And so people like Horace Mann and others took their model from Prussia, where they had a state education system, they had truant officers, they had compulsory school attendance. They had all of that, and our educators thought, that's wonderful. Why don't we have it here? And then, of course, the Protestants got involved because they became terribly frightened of the Catholic immigration, and they thought that there was going to be a counter-reformation. And so they decided, hey, maybe this government system is not a bad idea because we'll control it. We'll get all of these Catholic kids in our schools and we'll convert them to Catholicism. So what do you think the Catholics did? They created their own school system. They knew what was happening. They were not dummies. And so they created this Catholic parochial school system, of course, which educated children very well and inculcated them in their religion and turned out some pretty good patriotic American citizens. I'd say they did a pretty creditable job. Today, the Catholic school system is practically the same as the secular system because the nuns are no longer there. And you just have the kids coming out of the teachers' colleges who are now in the Catholic schools, and they're doing what all of the public schools are doing with whole language and the rest of it. So we know that the premises of the government education system were ill-founded, based on lies, based on negative assertions. And what we have to do then is restore American education to what what an education system should be like in a free society. In a free country, education should not be in the hands of the government. It should be entirely private, run by churches, run by proprietors, the way it was in the 1830s and 40s when we had academies of all kinds, private academies. The only place where you had, you might say, a kind of government school would be the so-called common schools that were run by local towns. Local towns had these common schools and they hired the teachers, they chose the books, they chose the curriculum. There was no centralized control. It was Horace Mann who brought the Prussian centralization system, where you had a bureaucracy in the state capital that would be running education, and that's the way it's been ever since. And the system gets worse and worse. It gets more controlling. They extend the school year. They extend the school day. They have more rules than ever. Certification, teacher certification, and all of that. So, what is the solution? The only solution is to get the government out of the education business. We've got to have a long-range plan. We've got to think in terms of what do we want our country to be like. As I said up at the podium there, that with this data collection system, they want totalitarian control over everything, everyone. Cradle to grave, gestational periods, parent control, and we've got to have a vision of what we want a free society to be like, a Christian nation to be like. And of course, we've got to get rid of the get the government out of the school business, education business, because it has simply fouled it up. And also, monopolies are not good things. You know, the idea we have a monopoly education system and we have antitrust laws. Nobody says that a monopoly is good. How come this monopoly, which wants to even get bigger and more of a monopoly, how come that liberals don't come out against it? Well, it's because that's part of their agenda. But why are monopolies bad? First of all, you know what the definition of a monopoly is? A monopoly is a situation that forces people to pay the highest price for the worst product. That's a monopoly. You'll pay the highest price for the worst product. That's exactly what we have today in public education. We're paying more money for it than ever before, and it's worse than ever, isn't it? And you have no choice. Take it or leave it. Well, I'm glad you've left it. But think of all your friends and relatives who are still in it. Monopolies eliminate competition. Your competition. They want to get rid of you. Oh, yeah, they don't mind if there are a few Christian schools, small fundamentalist schools. They don't mind if there are these fancy prep schools for the elite. so that Hillary Clinton's daughter, Chelsea, could go to an elite school. You see, what we're getting taught in this society, where we're headed toward this new world order, a socialist society in America, that'll be like a pyramid. At the top, you'll have the elite, Hillary and Billary, you see. They represent the highest intelligence, you know, Slick Willy, right. They represent America's elite, the rulers. That's what they'd like to be, to rule over us. You know, that adulterer would like to rule over us. And then beneath them you have the privileged class that gain all of their power and privilege from the elite at the top. That's the president of IBM. That's, what's his name? Dan Rather. The anchor persons, the artists, the all these people who are getting money from the National Endowment for the Arts and that sort of thing. That's the privileged class. And then below them are you and me, the masses, the people who are going to be on the computer, who are going to be controlled, whom they would like to control. And if they can't, you know, they'll send us to their psychiatric hospitals or their concentration camps. God knows what they've got planned. You can be sure they're planning something. I mean, just look at what happened at Waco. Here, what they wanted to do was serve a search warrant. That was the whole purpose of that, was to serve a search warrant to David Koresh so that they could go in there and see if he was doing anything illegal. Now, how do you serve a search warrant? Well, according to the ATF, you get tanks, an army, helicopters, and you start shooting at people, men, women, and children. And they had planned this for months. This was not a sudden desire. In other words, you have in our government totalitarians who think like totalitarians. And this was their test to see if they could get away with it. You know, they wanted us. Is that how you hand a search warrant to somebody? The easiest thing for them to have done would have been to knock on the door. Come in a simple car, you know, maybe a Taurus or a Sable. Drive up, knock on the door, say, hey, we're from the government. Here's a search warrant. We want to search your place. Do you know what David Koresh would have said? Come on in, guys, because they weren't doing anything illegal. Do you think that they were stupid enough to do anything illegal, knowing what the atmosphere was concerning guns in this country? They weren't doing anything illegal. And the reason why Koresh had so many guns was because he was in the gun business. That was the way he was making money for his religious group there, was to buy and sell guns. And you know, all over the country, they have all kinds of gun sales and fairs and all that sort of thing. So he was in the gun business. He wasn't doing anything illegal. All they had to do was knock on his door. And if they wanted to arrest him, they could have arrested him when he was out, you know, going to a restaurant or to the market or whatever. They had plenty of opportunity. But they planned it in their way, a massive military assault. Gives you an idea of how these people think. And it all came out. Has anybody been punished? Anybody gone to jail because of having helped murder men, women, and children? Nothing has happened. So we know what the enemy looks like. We've got to curtail the enemy. And we've got to get the government out of the education business. Now, there is an getting back to monopoly. So the monopoly controls teacher education, certification, all of that. The monopoly prevents innovation, except whenever it helps the monopoly. You know, they don't like innovation. The monopoly distorts the marketplace by creating artificial values, things that the school forces you to do, whether you want to or not, and you pay for them. The monopoly serves the interests of the monopolists, not the consumer. The monopoly undermines a free society. The monopoly institutionalizes educational malpractice, such as whole language, look say. It's institutionalized. Kids are being ruined by the millions, and it's all being done by this monopoly. And a monopoly will forever be a threat to homeschoolers and educational freedom. As long as that monopoly exists, it's like this monster, this octopus, that is forever. For example, the NEA has in one of its resolutions a very, very unfriendly resolution about homeschoolers. The monopoly promotes socialism because it is socialism. It's government owned and controlled. That's socialism. So we've got this socialist monopoly, this monster sitting in the middle of American culture and education, and it wants to eat us alive. Now, the monopoly also increases power of government over our lives because it's governmental, and it wants to expand its tentacles over all of us. The monopoly sets arbitrary prices for its own services. The monopoly is insulated from market forces. For example, the more failure they have, the more money they get. Isn't that true? I mean, any normal business would go bankrupt, but not the government schools. The more failure, well, we've got to help them. We've got to give them more money, you see. And also, the monopoly is driven by politics because its cash flow depends on its ability to control the legislature and control the taxpayer. So this is a monopoly that's got to be gotten rid of if we want to restore a free society. Now, there is an organization that was started by a friend of mine by the name of Marshall Fritz called the Separation of School and State Alliance. And this is a little pamphlet that he has put together. He has a proclamation for the separation of school and state. And what he's getting are people to sign it so that he has 5-10 million signatures. That's when the legislators will begin to look up, when they say, hey, you know, I better get on this bandwagon, you know. If I want to be a leader, I better run up front, you know, start leading. You'll find some of them who will lead. But let me read this proclamation for you. And hopefully you'll sign it. And if you want to, you can, if you sign it and put your names and addresses, you can give them to me and I will send them all to Marshall in Fresno, California. Or you could do it yourself, whichever you like. But he says, whereas more and more children are failing to grow into responsible, competent, caring adults, and whereas parents have the responsibility and the right to provide for an education for their children, and whereas independent schooling served Americans well from the 1620s to the 1840s, it is time to consider a return to the educational freedom from which the American Republic was born. Reform cannot fix government-run schools. A common school system, even if it is well-funded and staffed with talented, caring teachers, cannot address the differing hopes Americans hold for their children. In fact, government-run schools have divided communities into factions, contending for control of school boards, textbooks, and teaching methods. When the strongest factions use schools to shape attitudes or control the content of children's minds, a society falls apart. How can young people build an academic foundation, a sense of purpose, and respect for teachers and parents in the midst of this turmoil? Reform of state schooling is not enough. In fact, reform is impossible. I mean, I've been in this battle now for 30 years in just trying to get phonics back in the schools. It's like hitting your head against a stone wall. You might here and there have a little success. You'll get some phonics in a school, but it'll be there for a year or two, and before you know it, they're back to whole language, back to look say. Parents have been fighting sex education for how long? Do you know how long? From the very beginning, 30 years ago. Is there less sex education in the schools? Well, now they're giving out condoms, you know. It's blatant. As a matter of fact, where I live, there's a town called Concord. You remember Lexington and Concord? Wonderful town. And they have a high school there, Concord-Carlisle High School. And they have in that school system a human sexuality course that goes from kindergarten to 12th grade. So they start sex education now in kindergarten. Now, how do they do it in kindergarten? Well, teachers are very clever these days. And I sat through a presentation whereby they had a teacher from each class, each grade, tell us how they teach sex education in that specific grade. Well, in kindergarten, what they do is the teacher uses two dolls. Obviously, it's a male and female doll. And she asks the class, these little kids, what are they, 5 years old? What's the difference between these two dolls? And the kids will say, oh, well, the color of the eyes, or the hair, or the clothing. The last thing they're going to think of are you know what. So what does she do? She does a slow striptease until the kids finally see what the real difference is. Well, why should one start inculcating this kind of stuff to a five-year-old, getting them interested in genitalia at five? But this is what they're doing. You see, they want to awaken these interests early enough so that the kids will begin experimenting early enough. Then when they get to the seventh grade, they have a very interesting course there. What they do is require all of the children to state the street terms, the slang, for every body part and sexual act. In other words, they want to make sure that every innocent girl has all of this filth in her head. And I can tell you, once this filth is in your head, you can't get it out. That's it. So this is a calculated effort to destroy the innocence of children. They had one, I think it was in the 9th or 10th grade, somebody talk about abstinence, and he sort of laughed as if, what a joke, abstinence. Who really believes in abstinence, you know? The kids are going to do it anyway, you know, they're a bunch of animals. That's the attitude. So that's what we're getting. So sex education has not been stopped, it's only gotten worse. And here and there, parents have complained, and so, okay, we won't give out the condoms. We'll do everything else, but we won't give out the condoms. The kids will actually have to go out to the drugstore and buy their own condoms. And that's something. And the same thing is going on in colleges. I sat through a group session at Tufts University where they were talking about giving out condoms to the students, making condoms available. And you should hear the arguments for condoms. Finally, I got so disgusted. You know, first I said, well, what's wrong with having the kids if they needed condoms, go to the drugstore and buy them themselves? Why do we have to give them free to the kids? What is this nonsense that they are now entitled to free condoms? What's this business of free condoms? Is that like free lunch? Finally, these arguments got to me to the point where I said, okay, I've had enough. Why don't you simply put a package of condoms in every dormitory so that the kids will not actually have to go out and get them? And you know, they agreed. They said, what a wonderful idea. You know, like the Gideon Bible, they're now going to put a package of condoms in every dormitory so that the kids don't have to be embarrassed, don't have to go looking for them. It just shows you how corrupt the country has become. And it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse. So that's why I say that reform cannot fix the government-run schools. You can't get phonics in the schools. Oh, yeah, they're going to try to change it in California. You know why they're going to? You know why they've raised this ruckus in California over whole language? Because a grandmother found out that her grandson was being taught by whole language and couldn't read. And she had been in the school system, I forget in what capacity. So she complained. She's a very, alert woman with a lot of guts, and she's managed to create a sensation in California. But if her little grandson hadn't been affected by this, nothing would have happened. And God knows how long phonics will be in the schools of California, even if it ever gets there. We don't even know yet, because there's tremendous resistance on the part of the educators. They're not very happy with this. They want their whole language. So reform is impossible, and that's why the only solution is to get the government out of education. Let me continue reading. The solution to the education crisis. To solve the education crisis, we need only copy America's experience with religious diversity. Americans enjoy a high degree of religious harmony because they undid government compulsion in school funding and attendance. Therefore, in a pluralistic society, we must undo government compulsion in school funding and attendance. Then we can preserve our diversity, protect parents' rights, and enable students and teachers to flourish in an environment of educational freedom. By my signature below, I proclaim publicly that I favor the separation of school and state. And if you do sign this thing, then print your name and address, and you can either hand this to me, or you can send it into the addresses at the bottom, Separation Alliance, etc. I believe that that's the way to go. I attended the second conference that they had in Washington. When was that? It was in December. And we had a wonderful array of speakers. There are a lot of very intelligent, well-informed people who realize that the time has come for the separation. We've got to get the government out of the education business. Because there's no way, this idea that we should take back the schools. First of all, we never had them to begin with, you see. We never had them. The idea that the public had the public schools is ridiculous. We never had them. So there's nothing really to take back. And even if they had been, you can't take them back. And I'll tell you why. Because if the system is controlled at the higher level by the colleges of education, the universities. And those colleges of education were created by the enemy. They weren't ours to begin with. They were created by the other side, by the psychologists, the behavioral psychologists. They created the graduate schools of education, and it's at the graduate schools of education when you have all of these people taking their degrees in education, and what are they going to do with all that, those degrees? They need jobs. And the new system that's being imposed, school to work, will provide plenty of jobs. Plenty of jobs, data gathering. Jobs in designating, different occupations. I'll give you an idea of what they did in Texas, what the bureaucrats have been working on. 1995-96 Guide to Quality Workforce Planning for Teachers and Counselors. School to work, it's all there. It tells you what every child has to learn in each job. For example, there's a designation for... here's a job description. Brick mason. Well, how did brick masons get their jobs before this? Yeah. How come we've got all these plumbers and electricians and people who have been doing wonderful jobs without this system? But now the public school is going to be in the business of training your local brick mason. And they have all kinds of statistics, aptitudes, attention to detail, color discrimination, eye-hand-foot coordination, finger dexterity, form perception, general learning ability, manual dexterity, motor coordination, spatial perception. Is that how you become a bricklayer? A brick mason? You can imagine going through these tests. And then they go through here, duty, constructing brick buildings, tasks, lay out brick wall to prepare the area for masonry work. Bond brick wall to prepare each course of masonry. Build leads and lay to the line to construct brick veneer wall. it just goes on and on, you know. Bond the wall, build a Roman arch, build a soldier arch, build corner brick columns, build rectangular brick columns. Gee, we'll have kids doing all kinds of fancy brickwork, you know. Oh, it's just an incredible, this goes on for pages. This is just, pardon? Yeah. Carpenter, ooh, let's see what carpenter's got to do. Yeah, you get your hammer. With kids these days, you don't know what they're going to do with the hammer. But it just goes on and on and on. I can't believe it. Yeah.
Or is it to assign them?
Well, I imagine they'll use them. It says here, install a commode, install a lavatory, install a shower, install a vent stack, install a collar clamp, install a gooseneck connection. I mean, you know, how were carpenters taught these things before the schools decided to get involved in them? And you know that if the schools get involved with them, what kind of carpenters we're going to have? We'll have the same kind that they have in the Soviet Union, where everything falls apart. Have you ever seen the brickwork that they do in the Soviet Union? I mean, you know, people walk through the streets wondering if the bricks are going to fall off the buildings on them. And they've got a diesel mechanic, you name it. All these different auto body repairer. I guess they'll have to go to Mako for their occupational guides. But it just gets so ridiculous. And but that's what these, all those jobs, all those people who are in the colleges of education are going to be doing. They're going to be running this massive system of job training. American education will no longer be the training of the mind, the training of intellect. You will be trained to serve the government or serve industry. That's it. Yes?
Do you have documentation that shows, and I think this goes on to the question that Emma asked, that the system is set up to either that the students will choose their career path or that it will be chosen for them based on their testing?
Well, Will the student have a choice in this? I imagine that they'll have to first ask the student, what would you like to do? And then they'll say, sorry, the quota is filled. Like supposing a young lady wants to be a hairdresser. They'll say, sorry, we've got too many hairdressers. Now, in a competitive society, in a free society, it doesn't matter how many hairdressers you have, because one particular hairdresser with great talent can, you know, create a whole company. You know, look what some people have done with just shampoo. You know, well, supposing the government says there are too many shampoos. No, you can't create your own shampoo. You can see how this whole scheme conflicts with our idea of free enterprise, with ambition, with our entrepreneurship and all of that. Yes, sir. Yes.
It actually sounds very good. But what you're saying is you're taking a good concept, which is to create a craftsman, and put it in the hands of the state, where you're regulating the maybe restricted.
Exactly.
Well,
yeah, I'm not saying that anything is bad in what they're listing. I'm simply saying, should the school system be involved in this? We do have vocational education, but should everybody in America now be told at, say, the third grade what you're going to be for the rest of your life? And everything is going to be, all the decisions are going to be made for you? As I said earlier, when I was going to school, the point was they gave you basic academic skills. Let's face it, the most important thing for education is to develop the mind, develop the brain. And If you don't, and if you ignore that, and by the way, since they're going to be using whole language, these kids won't be able to read very well, you see. So you're going to create a dumbed down a group of people who are going to be put into certain tracts, vocational tracts, with or without their will. I mean, you know, what can a third grader say about what he or she wants to become? How do they know it at that grade? Yes.
In Oregon already, Beaverton is where I'm from. The CAN, Sin in the CAN, it's tracks. TQWIM,
Total Quality Management.
The fourth level, it's already the ISO series, and many of the companies that people believe is for quality control at 3 or 4, it's in 2 decades, Beaverton and CAN. This is new. My husband recently became an employee. It's very new. We're for profiling. We screen everyone, If selected, you will receive a letter explaining when to come to an orientation meeting. You must participate in order to continue receiving unemployment insurance benefits.
Yeah.
We made the decision to lose our homes before we were getting paid.
Right. Well, the thing is that it's a matter of freedom. It's not a matter of whether they know what are the components of being a carpenter. It's whether or not that this is the kind of system that we want in America. East Germany had a system whereby they had quotas. Sure, they produced bricklayers and carpenters, but what they were doing is telling people that you can be this or you can be that, but you can't be what you want to be. You can only be what we want you to be. The decisions of, you know, in a free society, you take your chances. You say, I want to be a carpenter. Oh, but there are so many carpenters around. Yeah, but I'm a good carpenter. And I'll do good work. As a matter of fact, I'll do cabinet work. I'll do special work. I'll be very creative. I'll create a company, you see. So we have the freedom to do things, but under this system, you will not have that freedom. And then, of course, you will be controlled by the computer. They'll know your attitudes. They'll know everything about you. And they'll be able to control you. So you have to see all of this as one piece of a larger structure that they're creating.
One thing
yes, sir.
Brought into this, and maybe it's too science fiction-ish, I don't know, but the whole realm of genetic engineering is also the enemy of
right.
molding. And the whole thing plays into a story I read in the 10th grade called Brave New World.
Oh, yes,
and
sure.
I'll never forget. And you see it being played out already in China.
Yes.
But Brave New World took place in the United States. And that, you know, today it's not like the future.
Well, even that was written by Aldous Huxley Huxley remarked that it was coming to pass much faster than he had imagined. Before he died, he said, hey, this is really happening, you know. Before our very eyes, we're getting this Brave New World. And it's up to us to decide whether this is the kind of society we want to live in. There are a lot of people who think it's a perfectly great way. I mean, one of the points of that Look magazine article about East Germany was that, hey, there are a lot of people in East Germany very satisfied with that system. They don't want freedom. What they want is their steady job and their little car and their apartment, and that's it. And they're happy, and a vacation once a year, and they're perfectly satisfied. I don't know, if that satisfies you, then this is for you, you see. Yes, ma'am.
I recently had a privilege speaking to two Hungarian students, and what these articles aren't telling you
Oh yeah. Not only that, but you know what the Russians, that motto in Russia was that they pay us to work. Well, how does it go? Very interesting. Pardon?
They pretend to pay us, and we pretend to work.
Yeah, they pretend to pay us, and we pretend to work. You see, because if they're going to have quota jobs, if they're going to train you for something, they've got to supply the job. And even if there's no job available, they're just going to, you know, have to create a job. So that's why in Russia, nobody takes a job seriously, because they have to be there. And so I remember reading about these people going into a state-owned restaurant, and they were waiting to be waited on, but the waiters were playing cards. The waiters couldn't have cared less, you know. And when they felt like it, they got up and then they served, and the service was very surly. It was a government job, you know. You ever been to the post office lately? The post office shuffle. Have you ever seen anyone at the post office do anything fast, you know? Occasionally, you get a conscientious postal worker who will snap it up. But you go into the Social Security agent, any government office, and they've got the government shuffle. You notice? Nobody is in a hurry for anything. And you're waiting online, and you're waiting, and they have their coffee break, and when they're good and ready, then they call your number. And then you go for whatever service you have to go. And who needs more of that? Yes, sir. Yes.
And I guess, what do you see in the way you're just trying, I think everyone here is committed to trying to pull the freedom round, but also just looking to the government to take care of everything.
Well, you're absolutely right. There are people looking to government to take care of everything, and that's what Mark Tucker and his crowd are counting on. They're counting on that mentality, having been imbued now in Americans for so long, that most Americans will accept that. But the problem in America is policy is not set by the majority. Policy is set by a small group that makes that is determined to change things. You take, for example, the gay agenda. Well, how many gays are there? And yet, why does their agenda, why do they keep winning and our side keeps losing? It's because they concentrate on it and they hammer away at it. And people just get tired. Most people are spectators. They're not politically active. Most Americans are spectators. They see politics as an arena where you've got the Republicans, you've got the Democrats, you've got the left, you've got the right. And they're busy doing other things. They're not interested. They'll accept whatever is handed down to them. If America becomes a dictatorship, they'll find a way to live with it. That most people are like that. They want to attend their cat shows, and they want to breed horses, or do whatever it is they want to do, or collect baseball cards, you know, if that's their great passion, rather than concentrate on what we are dealing with, you see. And the homeschool movement, the beauty of the homeschool movement is that you are people who have made a clean break with the statist institutions. Do you know that you're revolutionists? Do you know that you're a bunch of revolutionaries? You have carried out the most revolutionary deed of Americans since 1776 to make this break with the statist institutions and to go it alone and to say to the institutions, I'm taking back my family's time, I'm taking back my family's responsibility, I am going to live according to the Bible, according to Scripture, I'm going to raise my children in that way, and the heck with the government. I don't need the government. We don't need the government. So you're going to be bringing up children who have never or rarely seen the inside of a government institution. Now, of course, you've got to have a social security number and a driver's license and all of that stuff. Well, I don't know what's going to happen to social security. Nobody knows. They say it's going to go broke. They're going to privatize it. Nobody really knows. But these governments have shown that they're very inefficient instruments for doing anything. Anything. They couldn't even win the Vietnam War. You know, there's not very much that can be done. Now look what happened in in the late war in the Middle East. So that was a great victory that we won. And all of a sudden, all these guys are coming down with these problems. Nobody thought about God knows what. Was it, pollution or chemicals? All of these guys were inoculated with this anti-chemical warfare vaccination. Now, is that what is causing all of these strange diseases and conditions that these people have? You know, our government is in the habit of using the American people as experimental lab rats. I mean, this has happened over and over again where the governments have decided that every child should get this inoculation, or every child should, there was a time, for example, right after World War II when radioactivity was a big thing and they subjected children to a radioactive bath. I forget what was the exact particular method that they used, but it had something to do with radioactivity. They thought it would, kill germs or whatever. And the result is that you have people coming down with cancer 30 years later, 40 years later, and they trace it back to that. And then recently it was made public that the polio vaccines were contaminated. And so a whole lot of people today, and they say, oh, well, only 40 million people were affected. Only 40 million, And now they want to force you to have your children inoculated, not just for smallpox, which has disappeared. As a matter of fact, the only smallpox virus that still exists is in a test tube in Yale University, and they don't want to get rid of it because it's an endangered species. the smallpox virus has a right to live, doesn't it? But they still give you vaccinations, right, against smallpox. But there is no more smallpox. And now they have this DPT? That's lethal. Some of the kids who have gotten that shot have wound up as vegetables. And I know of a case because these parents asked me to tutor this little girl of theirs who had that shot when she was an infant, and that the result is that she barely can articulate herself, will never learn really very much, has seizures, and it's costing these parents. I mean, it's agony. They've sued the government, and the government says, no, we're not going to pay you. We have nothing to do with it, even though it was a government program. Now they want your child to get hepatitis shots, measles shots, smallpox shots, chickenpox shots, diphtheria shots. I mean, you name it. Your poor kid's arm will be perforated, It'll be like a... And they don't ask you, is your child allergic to some of this stuff? I had a sister who was allergic to penicillin. And she went to have her wisdom teeth removed, and the doctor gave her penicillin without asking her if she was allergic to it. And so she came down with colitis, and she eventually died. You have to know these things. There are children who are allergic to these shots. Now, you have to weigh and say, well, what is the risk that my child will catch hepatitis or catch whatever it is, typhoid or whatever it is, or whether that child is allergic to one of these shots, you see. I'm inclined to believe that one should not make one's body the recipient of all kinds of strange injections, knowing full well that some of these sera are contaminated. I mean, I believe that that's how AIDS got started. I believe that AIDS was a result. That's why it took place in Africa, because this contaminated sera was used in Africa among a lot of people there, and all of a sudden they come down with AIDS, you see. So we don't know the full story on this. We may never know the full story, but you have to think of all of these things. So the government is doing all of this. Yes, sir.
I'm Dr. Blumenthal. Earlier you made the statement that what we raising children that have not been in private state agencies.
Right.
And your earlier lecture, your comment was directed towards state universities and our higher education as never belonging to a Christian worldview or never belonging to a Christian worldview. We're going to be raising children that will have a calling of God on their lives to be operating in a way that requires advanced education. Do you know any institutions that will be really actively promoting a biblical worldview?
Oh, yes. Right. Well, about the universities, first of all, the old great universities were started by Christians. Harvard University was founded by Calvinists. Princeton was founded by Calvinists. So was Dartmouth and Yale, all of those great universities. But Harvard was the first to go Unitarian, and then the others became more and more liberal. I was really talking about the graduate schools of education that were created by the psychologists. Oh yeah, oh yes, definitely. Except you do have a few good Christian colleges like Pensacola Christian College, and they produce the Abeka books, you know. Bob Jones University, which is a very fine institution. You have Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, which is a secular, but it still adheres to Judeo-Christian principles. There are a couple of others, not very many actually. Well, but there's also a movement among, you have to understand what's happening in education today. Technology is making the campus obsolete. Let me give you an example. Why should you send your child halfway across the country at great expense to sit in a lecture hall being given a lecture by an assistant instructor who probably knows no more than your son or daughter? Spend all that money when you can get a lecture delivered by the top professor on a video or on a CD-ROM and sit at home and view it. What's the difference? You know what's the difference? $20,000. That's the difference. You know. So I mean, the technology. Lou Pearlman has written a very interesting book on. It's called Schools Out, and it's about how technology is really making schools, particularly universities, obsolete. As a matter of fact, there are two very good directories of universities that offer off-campus courses, and you can get degrees. You know that Harvard University offers 600 different courses to people off-campus? You don't have to attend a university any longer to get a university degree. I would say that when it comes to medicine and maybe engineering, you might have to attend a graduate school, like a school of medicine, but for pre-med, you probably could do your pre-med at home. Things are changing. The technology is with the CD-ROMs, the modems, the videos, the audios, you name it. I mean, we've got all that we need really to do it at home. So that's something to consider. But if you're thinking in terms of you want your daughter to meet a nice Christian young man, or you want your Christian son to meet a nice Christian young lady, send them to Bob Jones University. I've been there several times, and it's like a time warp. The girls are actually wearing dresses, and the boys are actually wearing, you know, ties, shirts and ties, and jackets. I mean, you walk at that campus and you think it's 1950. But it's wonderful. It's a tremendous, wonderful atmosphere. Yes, sir.
I need to ask you some advice, please. My name is Lee. I'm an unlicensed fundamentalist breeder. I'm a member of a homeschool support group.
Right.
For years, our membership was 60 to 80 families here in Northeast Portland, Oregon. Oregon.
Oregon.
And our membership is up to around 150 now. So our membership is up, but our participation is down. It's very easy to be a homeschooler in Oregon, much easier than it used to be.
Good.
And so that's good in some respect, but I think that our group is getting soft. And
well, it's my job to get you all riled up.
What can you tell us in a nutshell? We just have a few minutes left.
Yes.
We can take back to our groups and kind of kick them and get them going a little bit.
Well, sign the proclamation. Do that. Tell them about the dangers ahead, that the other side is not going to just let, you know, things slide. They have plans for you. You could see it in everything they do. If I had the time, I would read you some of the things that went on in Portland at the big conference they had, the School to Work Conference. And one of the major players there was a gal by the name of J.D. Hoy, who in her talk, she's now the director of School to Work in Washington, she said, everybody's included. She was asked, you mean all? She said, all means all. So they have plans for you, you know. All right, your friends, your fellow homeschoolers are perhaps oblivious to this or not terribly concerned about it, but you have to tell them to get involved politically, get, as I said, get your directory of Washington, of the Capitol, of the Congress, and all of that, and start writing letters to the editor, start writing letters to your congressman. It doesn't take all that many people to do it. You know, we were able to stop those two bills by a relatively small group. We meet once a year in St. Louis under something called the Constitutional Coalition, run by a lady by the name of Donna Hearn. And she brings us all together and we discuss these things and we discuss strategy and we discuss the strategy of stopping these two bills. Phyllis Schlafly is always there. And we were able to stop them. So it doesn't take very many people to do that because you're dealing with conservatives who want to do the right thing. As long as they know, you tell them what the right thing is to do. They're just an appalling amount of ignorance among these legislators. It's the same, I'm sure, with your state legislature. I understand that they stopped the bill about the credit, you know, with the parent training courses by simply talking to the man and say, hey, you can't do this. You
know. She still believes in it. They got several other representatives to remove their names. They're going, oh,
yeah. Well, that's what we've got to do. We've got to educate these legislators. You know, you go to Washington today, and who do you meet? You meet the young staff people who are fresh out of college who know nothing. Nothing. I mean, their heart is in the right place, but they just don't have the facts. They don't have the information. They weren't taught it in college, you know. So you've got to educate, constantly educate, 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 and assert your rights and exert pressure on these people. Yes, sir.
Just some counter thoughts. As far as three things you said kind of disturbing. One is the HIV roots. I think it's pretty clear from a lot of people's perspective that the HIV virus lives in monkeys in Africa.
Right.
Tribes that ate those monkeys whose immune system can handle a virus then acted in some behaviors where they transmitted the virus.
Yeah.
Probably a lot more evidence of that.
Well, I don't pretend to be an expert on this. I'm just saying that, yeah.
Yeah. A little bit about this area.
Right, okay.
In Britain, they decided not to look into the Iraqi war as far as this Gulf War syndrome. I happened to be in a research project where we looked at 1,000. We put a tremendous amount of effort into trying to find out whether that truly exists. And I can tell you there are a lot of good people that looked. And I just want to tell you the misperception that people haven't looked and very sincere people looking for a Gulf War syndrome, and it's hard to find any evidence. When you do population-based studies, do the right thing, do your homework.
Yeah.
And the last thing is, there is evidence in Japan, France, parts of the United States, people that avoid routine immunizations and what happens. And I think it would be helpful to put that out on the table as well as your perspective, which I happen to disagree with that perspective, and I think there's pretty good evidence to show that people that avoid routine immunizations, there is a sequela. Because of herd immunity, usually most people are protected from that. When the herd immunity decreases and wanes, then you see the results. And I think it would be helpful to put the information on the table.
Oh, sure. I just have put out my own suspicions and my own reservations.
It's hard for me to hear that. Yeah. I know some pretty strong.
All right. Well, I'm not an expert on these things. All I know is that all I was given was one vaccination, period. Now, when I was in the Army, I had typhoid shots. That's about it. I didn't get any, anti-measles shots. I didn't get chicken pox shots. They didn't exist in those days. Didn't even get polio shots. Now you have to ask yourself, do we all need all of these shots? I mean, is it overkill? Is it inoculation overkill? It's the same, for example, with Ritalin. Why do we have 4 million kids on Ritalin now? I mean, there's something wrong there, And there are people who defend Ritalin. They'll say, well, gee, I would have never gotten through school unless I'd had Ritalin, I think we're at the end, isn't that it? And I guess our young men won't come back to stop this, right? Thank you very much.